their drinks in easy silence for a little while, watching the small pockets of people who had begun to mill about the edges of the room. Jeff seemed to notice someone, his posture drawing taller as his eyes tracked whoever it was as they wove through the groups. "Well," Lydia said, taking another sip of her coffee, "I'm excited to see how speed dating is going to go for a couple of eternal bachelors."
"We've both been married, actually," he replied, not looking at her. "My tech is a widower, did you know that?"
"Huh? I didn't." Pan Mytek had been alone certainly for as long as Lydia could remember. She felt a rush of guilt thunder through her chest.
"And as for me,"
Jeff smiled wistfully, though he still didn't look at her.
"Well, I've been where you are."
Lydia did a double take.
"You have?"
"Well," he said with a chuckle, "not exactly where you are. I never pretended to be a totally different person to bag a charming criminal."
"Touché."
"I mean, I was married to someone who turned out to be..."
He paused a moment or two, weighing his words.
"Not who I thought she was. After the divorce, I was too afraid of going through that again. Thought it was better to just be alone."
"And was it?"
"No, it wasn't."
He smiled, the creases around his eyes worn and deep.
"And as for my tech, well, he married the love of his life and then she died before they were even 30. Cancer, I think."
A thump of something cold and heavy clunked in Lydia's chest as her eyes found Pan Mytek talking to his red-headed lady in the corner of the room, his gnarled, arthritic hands gesticulating wildly.
"I never knew that."
Jeff smiled, but he wasn't looking at her.
"You don't have the monopoly on tragic tales of love, you know."
He drained the rest of his coffee in one long sip, wiping its residue from his snow-white moustache with the pad of one thumb.
"Anyway, I thought it might cheer you to know you've inspired a couple of old farts to put themselves back out there."
Lydia almost laughed.
"I have."
"Of course," he nodded. "I mean, if you're trying to start again at your age..."
"I'm 39, Lydia interjected.
"At your age?" Jeff repeated firmly, a twinkle in his eye this time. "Then there's hope for all of us, isn't there?"
Lydia tried to frown, but she couldn't help the upward tug of her mouth.
"I'm not sure I entirely like what you're saying there, but I agree with the sentiment."
"Anyway, come on," Jeff said, chuckling softly to himself and moving to straighten the wildly unfashionable tie he must have dug out from some long-forgotten corner of his wardrobe. "Let's find you a husband,"
she snorted a laugh.
"Uncle G, that is not what's happening here."
And he laughed too, bumping her shoulder lightly with his own.
"I know that, kiddo, but that doesn't mean you can't enjoy your night."
And she actually did enjoy it, despite herself. Once she'd got over the general mortification of being chattered up by men old enough to be her father, if not grandfather, she found a certain comfort in talking to them. They were all trying to start again, as Jeff had said, in the autumnal years of their lives, and she could respect that. If anything, it made her realise that actually she was still in the summer of hers. So she had finally walked away from Adam, and maybe Jake was a non-starter too. But he had shown her one very important thing. She was perfectly okay, nowhere near the lost cause she'd thought she was those few short months ago. The fact that she didn't want to be okay, not without Jake, well, that was neither here nor there. He had done what he had done, and she had done what she had done, and that was that. She was starting again and she was fine. Almost. In fact, by the time they all piled back into Jeff's hatchback some 3 hours later, she was feeling almost jolly. Laughing as Pan Mytek gave the two of them a rousing roundup of the women he'd been matched with. Lydia herself had fared less well, although she had been slipped phone numbers by 3 of the men, one of which actually turned out to be his son's number.
He's a doctor, the man had said with a proud smile, and Lydia had smiled back, though now she was balling up the scrap of paper between her thumb and forefinger. She didn't want a doctor. If she was being very honest with herself, she didn't want anyone else at all. Just Jake. And there he was again, the memory of his hands on her skin, his voice in her ear, his heart beating hard against her palm as she laid it on his chest. Whatever lies they might have told each other, the night they'd shared was real. She was sure of it. She shook away the memory, trying hard to get back to that feeling of being fine, and as they pulled up to the curb outside Agger's house, there was something about it that caught her attention. She looked at the small clock on the dashboard. 11:07 p.m. And yet all of the lights in the house were still on. Agger went to bed religiously at 10:30 p.m. every night except for Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, and she took a very dim view of Steve staying up without her. Lydia frowned to herself, an anxious knot growing in her chest. She said her goodbyes and walked up the garden path, each step causing her heart to race a little faster in her chest. The door was unlocked when she got to it, and she pushed it open cautiously, dreading whatever it was she'd find on the other side. From the hallway, she could see into the kitchen, Agger and Steve sitting together, which in itself was a rarity, both smiling, actually smiling, at whoever it was sitting opposite them. Her heart clenched a little tighter as she padded towards the doorframe. Surely it couldn't be. Ollie? Her daughter looked up from the other side of the table, pushing a half-drunk mug of tea away as she leapt up, bounding over to Lydia and throwing long, tanned arms tightly around her neck while both women squealed with glee.
I missed you so much, Ollie mumbled into the mess of her mother's hair.
Lydia squeezed a little tighter at her daughter's words.
I thought you weren't home until next week.
Ollie stood a little way back, her sun-kissed cheeks popping dimples with the breadth of her grin.
I know, thought I'd surprise you.
Well, you definitely did that, Lydia chuckled softly.
I thought someone had died when I saw all the lights on at this time,
Agger tuttered.
I feel like I might die if that helps, Ollie said with a tired smile. That last flight nearly finished me off. Stuck in between a guy who literally snored for 11 hours and a woman who buzzed the flight attendants every 2 to 3 minutes.
She rolled her eyes.
The worst.
But Lydia couldn't focus on anything except how glad she was that Ollie was here, in person, right when she needed her the most. Agger had made up an emergency bed on the floor in Lydia's room, not quite having had the time to clear out the box room which Ollie had been staying in before she went away, and Ollie practically fell into it, her eyes half closed before she'd even hit the pillow.
I have something to show you in the morning, she said, her voice thick with exhaustion. Remind me.
And then her breathing slowed, an almost imperceptible smile on her face as she finally gave in to sleep. But whatever it was that Ollie had to show her, it didn't happen the following morning. Lydia checked on her daughter just after 10, when she herself had been awake a full 2 hours, and again at 12:30, but the youngster showed no sign of stirring. In fact, she didn't surface until almost 3, by which time Lydia had been for 2 walks and stress-baked an entire tray of cherry scones.
Morning,
Ollie said with a yawn as Lydia and Agger looked up at her from the table, where they were tucking into the still warm scones. Agger wasn't even commenting on the amount of butter Lydia was spreading onto hers, although she could tell from her mother's body language that she wanted to.
Afternoon, Agger replied, one eyebrow raised, and Lydia just laughed.
She must have needed it, she said with a smile, and Ollie grinned in return.
Scone?
Ollie's eyes widened.
Oh my God, yes.
Lydia watched her daughter inhale the scone. She tried to wait as long as she possibly could before reminding Ollie what she'd said before falling asleep, but in reality it was probably around 30 seconds.
"So you had something to show me?" she asked, curiosity getting the better of her.
Ollie nodded, just as Aga got up to pour more water for her tea, and as she passed them, Ollie silently gestured towards her grandmother, widening her eyes at Lydia. But Lydia only shook her head, not altering the volume of her voice.
"We might as well include her, she'll only listen in anyway."
And as Aga headed back for the table, Lydia thought she might just have seen the smallest of smiles cross her mother's face.
"Okay," Ollie said. "Where did I leave my backpack?"
Aga nodded pointedly to the purple bag abandoned by the kitchen door, and Ollie dashed off to grab it, fishing around for a while before pulling a battered magazine out of the main compartment. She laid it on the table, smoothing the pages out as best she could.
"Right, well," she started, thumbing through the magazine's pages. "I don't normally read in-flight mags because they are the worst, but on that last flight I did in the end, because I'd already finished my book and at that point I had to do something just so I didn't strangle the people next to me."
Lydia smiled. "Always a good plan."
"And look what I found,"
Ollie continued, smoothing the pages open at a double page spread.
"Or should I say, who I found?"
Lydia looked at the pictures, recognition grabbing at her as she did. The horse in the surf at sunset, the waves of a Hawaiian beach, a beautiful woman in all the pictures. A beautiful woman who Lydia had seen before.
"Lily Bennett," Lydia said,
pulling the pages closer to her and studying the familiar figure closely. Ollie's nod was slow, measured.
"That's what I thought too, except that this is a Finnish model called Freya Häkkinen."
Lydia's brows slowly pulled into a frown. She scanned the article, pulling it closer as she confirmed that Ollie was right, but her daughter reached in at that point, gently lowering the pages back down to the table.
"Oh no, don't read it, it'll depress you."
Ollie pushed the magazine away on the table a little, the pages still open.
"The main story is that she's a model and an heiress and she spends her days having exciting experiences in far-off lands because she just has so much money and doesn't know what to do with herself."
Lydia and Ollie rolled their eyes almost in sync. It made Lydia smile. "Wow."
"Yeah, wow."
Ollie's eyes widened in agreement.
"Anyway, I googled her when we landed. She's not really known here, but her photos are all over Instagram. Seems to be legitimately her."
Lydia nodded, absorbing the information, a puzzle slowly unfurling in her mind. "So," she started, "if this is Freya Hacker, what's it?" Ollie smirked.
"Häkkinen,
right? What you said?" Lydia pulled a face at her daughter before turning her attention back to the matter in hand. "So if these pictures are her?" Ollie nodded.
"Yep."
"Then who the hell is Lily Bennett?"
Aga finished dramatically, one drawn-on eyebrow raised. Ollie and Lydia spun to look at her, their combined surprise and amusement eventually sending the two of them into uncontrollable peals of laughter. Aga herself was unmoved.
"These scones are nice, Lydka," she said, as if nothing at all had happened. "Almost as good as Basha's."
And Lydia couldn't stop herself from throwing her arms around her mother's shoulders and kissing her lightly on the cheek.
"Thanks, Mama." Chapter 29.
Lydia's second week without Jake felt a little easier, but that in itself made it feel harder. She still jumped every time a message came through, feeling a fleeting rush of hope followed by a sharp stab of anger, and then relief when it turned out to be Tosh or Mila or Basha. Each of them had messaged at least twice, trying their best to distract her, to encourage her and, particularly in Basha's case, to feed her. And it worked okay. Until it didn't. Ollie, too, was trying to distract her and having marginally more luck. She had found another lead tracking down the real Lily Bennett and was following it obsessively, spending full nights down internet rabbit holes while her circadian rhythms were still all out of whack, updating Lydia over breakfast while her mother took slow sips of coffee, mentally preparing herself for the day ahead. It was on the Friday morning of that week that Ollie sat back in her chair, palms falling to the table as she declared, in a much smaller voice than Lydia would have expected,
"I've got her."
Lydia looked across at her daughter, eyebrows raised in a question.
"Lily Bennett,"
Ollie said a little louder.
"I found her. I know who she is."
It felt as if a long time passed then, with Ollie savouring her win and Lydia wondering if she even wanted to know at this point. She struggled to imagine an outcome that would make her feel better about where she'd ended up, yet at the same time she couldn't help but be a little intrigued about the mysterious list writer she'd spent so long wondering about, and who she actually was. "Are you going to tell me?" Lydia asked, a spoonful of cereal paused partway to her mouth. But Ollie just smiled.
"I'm going to show you. Are you working today?"
Lydia shook her head. She'd decided to book herself a long weekend to allow some time for uninterrupted wallowing.
"Perfect,"
Ollie said, a twinkle in her eye.
"Then today we're going on a little trip."
"A trip?" Lydia frowned, a little put out that her wallowing might now be interrupted after all. Ollie's smile widened, a dimple popping in her right cheek.
"Don't get too excited. You found the list in Moor Allerton, Sainsbury's. How far away did you think Lily could be?"
Lydia had actually not considered that before.
"We're just going into town,"
Ollie said, vaguely gesturing with her half-eaten slice of toast.
"But I'm going to treat you to fancy cake first."
Lydia's eyes lit up. She was never too sad for fancy cake.
"Ooh, at Francesca's,"
Ollie nodded. "Wait, though," Lydia frowned, one finger held up in question. "You literally just flew back from the other side of the world. Do you even have any money?" Ollie shifted in her chair.
"Right, well, when I said I was going to treat you..."
"I'm paying, aren't I?" Ollie nodded sheepish.
"Yes, you are."
But Lydia actually didn't care. Fancy cake was fancy cake, and Francesca's coffee shop was her absolute favourite place to get it. In fact, as the two of them set out on their way to Francesca's a couple of hours later, Lydia was feeling almost chipper. She deliberately parked in the multi-storey at the top end of town to avoid having to pass too near the corn exchange and deal with the memory of Jake leaning on the railings, waiting for her. And then, as they walked to Francesca's, she deliberately led Ollie down into Briggett, avoiding having to walk past the bar where she'd met up with him that first time. The bar where she had deliberately let him think that she was somebody else and started this whole nonsense. "It doesn't matter," she tried to tell herself, "because he's not a good guy anyway." But the more time that passed without him, the more Lydia began to doubt that was the truth. Still, she'd been wrong about Adam, and so, she reasoned, her judgment was flawed, just like the rest of her. And she was doing such a good job of ignoring it that, striding through the centre of Leeds arm in arm with her daughter on that warm summer day, it was fair to say that Lydia Gray was feeling okay. She felt even better a few minutes later when they climbed the two stone steps up into the cafe, breathing in the warm smell of coffee and sugar and freshly squeezed orange juice. Francesca was a curvy woman in her 60s with a wide smile and a beautiful singing voice, both of which she'd treated her customers to without reservation. She'd emigrated from Tuscany in her early 20s and had spent decades spoiling the people of Leeds with the most exquisite pastries, cakes and other delicacies, all served with proper Italian coffee or fresh juice. Lydia hadn't found Francesca's until Adam left her. She'd been back to Evelina's cafe a couple of times, but without Adam it had felt cold, and when she'd been passing the stone steps one day and heard Francesca and her son Matteo belting out an opera tune, she hadn't been able to stop herself from walking in. It had been her go-to ever since. Francesca, who knew all her regular customers by sight but who was terrible with names, looked up with a broad grin as she heard the bell over the door, and she rushed over to embrace Lydia and Ollie, her coarse black hair tickling at Lydia's nose as she did.
"Buongiorno, bellissimi," Francesca said, her voice warm and lyrical even when she was speaking. "I have not seen you for too long, please."
She gestured to a small table right by the window.
"Sit."
They plopped down happily with the warmth of the sun through the window on their skin, and for a moment, Lydia truly felt as if everything was right with the world. The two women laughed, they ate the very finest of Francesca's cakes, and they each privately ogled Matteo, a fine specimen of a man who fell almost exactly between their ages. Just then, just for that hour or so, everything was good and nothing was wrong. So it came as somewhat of a shock to Lydia when Ollie gathered up her things and said,
"Come on, let's go solve a mystery."
Lydia paid their bill and left Francesca with a generous tip and a promise that they wouldn't leave it so long before they visited again. And then they stepped back out into the haze of the midday sun. Ollie led the way this time, Lydia seeing her home city in a whole new light, as her daughter led her on a route she wouldn't have thought to take, passing shops Lydia had never seen before, and ending up at the foot of a building Lydia had passed hundreds of times in her life, but never actually been in. Leeds Central Library. She spun to face Ollie, confused. "Don't tell me we're going to do more research on Lily in here. This is the kind of thing they do in films, not real life."
"No,"
Ollie said, rolling her eyes good-naturedly.
"We're going to find Lily."
Lydia huffed. "I know that, but..."
"She's in here,"
Ollie interrupted, mimicking her mother's one-sided frown. "Lily works in the library?"
"Hopefully,"
Ollie said, her tanned face relaxing into an easy smile.
"Otherwise, my detective skills are trash and I just wasted your whole morning."
Lydia would never describe a morning spent with her daughter as a waste, but she raised an eyebrow in a warning anyway, laughing when the expression made Ollie crack up. She followed Ollie up the stone steps and through the tinted glass doors, Lydia quickly drawing in a sharp breath at the absolute beauty of the old building, all carved stone archways and opulent mosaics, with a grand staircase that went up and up and up as far as she could see. She suddenly felt a little sad that she'd never been inside this building before. Ollie led her up the marble staircase, weaving effortlessly through the throngs of people browsing until she stopped short at the end of a huge bookcase, taking in a breath as she froze where she stood.
"That's her,"
she whispered quietly, as if the woman she was looking at were a flighty creature she might scare off. Lydia leaned next to her daughter, squinting to see where Ollie was looking, and when she did, her brows pulled tightly into a frown.
"That's Lily Bennett."
"Shh," Ollie scolded, though in reality Lily was much too far from them to be in any danger of overhearing.
"We're in a library,"
she whisper shouted.
"You have to be quiet."
Lydia huffed in indignation before she turned back to look at the woman at the end of the row, her armful of books the biggest thing about her. Lily Bennett, if that even was the real Lily Bennett, was a small, mouse-like woman in a stiff navy sundress and buff-coloured cardigan buttoned once at the neck. Her mid-brown hair was cut into a shoulder-length bob, held back by a single hair grip on each side, and her shoes were the very definition of sensible. Lydia could sense her nerves from the other end of the shelves, and it made her nervous too, a roll of nausea in her stomach hitting her out of nowhere. This was not the carefree, easygoing life force of a woman she had modelled herself on, not at all. and Lydia was entirely unsure what to make of it.
"I'm going to talk to her," Ollie said in a bold voice,
and before Lydia could react, she was off, confidently marching the few steps to where the woman stood and leaving Lydia no choice but to shuffle up behind her, smiling awkwardly.
"Excuse me," Ollie said,
completely ignoring the nudge that Lydia had forced into the small of her back.
"Are you Lily Bennett?"
She turned in shock, colour flooding her pale cheeks.
"Yes,"
she said simply, and her voice was mouse-like too. Lydia took a deep breath.
"Are you the Lily Bennett who wrote this list?"
she asked, heart in her throat, and she held up the list, thumbed and worn, with its 8 thick red felt tip lines. Lily's brow creased, her mouth falling open a little in surprise.
"I am."
And then another emotion pulled at her expression, something like embarrassment, or maybe it was fear, and she took a step back away from them as she said more quietly,
"What is it that you want?"
That, perhaps, was the moment when Ollie realised that her enthusiasm may be coming across as intimidation, because she backed off a little too, throwing up her hands like a surrender.
"We just want to talk to you about it. Nothing bad, I promise."
Lydia, a half step behind her daughter, tried her hardest to look unassuming. And it must have worked, because after a beat, Lily nodded and forced a smile onto her face.
"I have a break in 10 minutes,
she said, just a step up from a whisper.
"There's a cafe in the tiled hall. I can meet you there."
And then she turned on her heel and walked away. Ollie turned back around with a triumphant grin.
"More coffee and cake, then."
The tiled hall was probably the single most beautiful room that Lydia had seen in her entire life. Huge arched windows let in floods of bright summer sunlight, beams reflecting off tiled surfaces the colour of the sea, with marble pillars that reached far up to an exquisite mosaic ceiling. She spent some moments taking it all in, letting Ollie lead her to a free table while she marvelled at the space, the design work, the acoustics. It was almost enough to take her breath away. They were just picking at their second slice of cake in as many hours when Lily walked in, hurried and flustered, stopping to grab a cup of tea before making her way over to their table, her face set in a frown.
"Please sit,"
Lydia said, trying to keep her smile as warm and inoffensive as possible. And Lily did, setting her teacup down gently on the table as she eyed the two women with suspicion.
"So,"
she said, her voice timid,
"what do you want to know?"
And Lydia started the only way she knew how, at the beginning. She told Lily how she'd found the list that day, the day she still thought of as rock bottom, and how it had inspired her from the start. She explained how, with a spot of interference from Ollie, she'd come to meet Jake, and how she'd accidentally but also sort of intentionally pretended to be Lily. How scared she'd been then that she herself was not enough. How being Lily back then was the catalyst for all the things that were different in her life now, and how, without the simple act of finding the list in the bottom of her trolley, she would probably be stuck, exactly how she had been, in love with a man who didn't love her back, and not a lot else. She explained how, by being Lily when she was too afraid of being herself, she had come to find not only that there was life in her yet, but maybe, possibly, that there was room for love in her heart again, however messy the situation with Jake had come to be. And she realised, only as she was speaking, that she had been looking for Lily this whole time, when the person she'd actually needed to find was herself. Lily sat motionless as Lydia was talking, the set of her shoulders gradually relaxing, and as Lydia finally finished what she was saying, Lily studied her for a moment or two, and then took a long sip of her tea.
"You know,"
she said finally in her church mouse voice,
"I can relate to that."
Lydia's mouth lifted in a half smile. "You can?"
"Pretending to be someone else?"
Lily smiled in return, the expression thawing out the cold lines of her face, and as she spoke more, her voice warmed up too, the tone soft and sweet and endearing.
"Have you seen my Instagram?"
Lydia and Ollie nodded in unison. Lily laughed, a sad song of a sound.
"It's ridiculous, really. I mean, I spend my days here."
She gestured vaguely to the library building around her.
"Surrounded by more tales and adventures and discoveries than I could probably read in a lifetime, and I'm too afraid to make any of my own."
"Is that why you wrote the list?" Ollie asked gently, and Lily nodded in return.
"One night I got a little bit drunk and I was a little bit fed up with myself and I decided to write a bucket list."
She took another sip of her tea.
"I didn't really know what kind of adventures I wanted to have, so I found a list on the internet and copied a few of them down. I started an Instagram account and I posted the list and I got a lot of followers right off the bat, all posting the loveliest comments about how brave I was, how inspiring."
She smiled, melancholy tugging at the edges of her lips.
"But then I woke up in the morning and I was still me."
Lydia smiled sympathetically. "That happens." Lily's laugh was barely a laugh at all.
"But I didn't want to let the followers down. Then I stumbled across an obscure model who was having adventures left, right and centre, and so I stole her pictures and passed them off as me."
She blushed furiously at that, casting her eyes down and sipping at her tea. "It happens to the best of us," Lydia said, her voice soft, and something about what she'd said made Lily look back up, straight at her.
"But you did the things, didn't you?"
she asked earnestly.
"You did the things I couldn't do."
Her brow crumpled a little.
"Did you cross everything off the list?"
Lydia shook her head. "Everything but number 9. Lily's smile softened then, her eyes closing slightly as she tightened her grip on her teacup.
"Ah, number 9.
She huffed out a small, secret laugh.
"Why number 9?
Ollie asked, popping the cake crumbs she'd been gathering into her mouth.
"All the other things on the list are so definite, so specific. And then number 9 is just..."
She shrugged, searching for the words.
"Well, it could be anything." "It felt specific to me,"
Lily said, colour rushing back to her cheeks.
"I knew exactly what it was. I just didn't want to write it down."
She went quiet then, sipping her tea delicately, and Lydia thought that might be all she was going to say on the matter. But after a while, Lily put her teacup down and smoothed her hands nervously over the skirt of her sundress.
"See that woman in the purple blazer?"
Lily said, subtly gesturing to a tall, raven-haired woman with an armful of books, chatting easily with an older lady while she replenished the stack of coffee cups. Lydia nodded.
"Her name is Janie,"
Lily said, and her voice caught a little on the name.
"She's my supervisor, and I've been in love with her since about 25 minutes into my first ever shift here."
They all watched Janie for a while as she laughed with the older woman. She was beautiful and assured, waving over to another staff member and then smiling in Lily's direction before she headed back out through one of the arched doorways. Lily turned back to them with sadness pinching at her features.
"She's always so nice to me, and I think for a moment, maybe she likes me. Maybe she knows I like her."
A small laugh escaped her as little more than an exhale.
"But then I think I'm being ridiculous. I mean, look at her. What if I ask her out and she says no?"
An image of Jake's face came out of nowhere, the memory of that crooked smile almost knocking the air out of Lydia's lungs. "What if you ask her out and she says yes?" she said, thinking back to the moment in the tent when Jake had first taken her hand. Lily laughed a little harder at that.
But that only really happens in films, doesn't it?
She blushed furiously.
Sometimes I imagine walking up to her and just kissing her out of the blue. I've thought about it a million times. God, imagine being a person who could just do that, just go for what they want.
She took another sip of tea, swirling the remainder around in the cup for a moment or two before carrying on.
That was the kind of person I wanted to be when I wrote the list.
You did that, Ollie said, one hand reaching to squeeze Lydia's forearm lightly. Lily's eyes opened wide.
You did?
Lydia supposed that she had. I mean, kind of, yeah.
How did it go?
Lily asked, her expression just a shade off awestruck.
It went great, Lydia started, remembering the kiss on the beach, and then she remembered the rest of it.
I mean, it went great, and then not so good, and then okay, and then great again, but overall great, right up to the part when he found out I was me and not you. Lily's brow creased.
But you've never been me, have you?
Lydia looked at her, an unspoken question on her lips.
If you were me, you'd never have ticked all those things off the list.
Lily smiled, sheepish.
I couldn't even do one.
I suppose not. Lily smiled, her eyes dipping to the table shyly.
You might have been using my name, but you were still very definitely you.
Lydia nodded, her brain heavy with the burden of this new information. She hadn't thought about it like that at all, but it made complete sense. She'd thought she was pretending to be Lily, but Lily didn't exist. Not in that way. So when she'd thought that Jake was falling for Lily and not her, that bit couldn't be true either. Which meant... She didn't even want to think about it. Do you want the list back? She asked Lily, trying to distract herself, but Lily shook her head.
No, it's yours now.
Her mouth hitched back up into its shy little smile.
I'm going to write my own, another one, with stuff I actually want to do on it, not just a list of things I found on a website.
Except for number 9, Ollie piped up and Lily laughed.
Oh, yes. I'm going to write a whole list of number 9s.
Ollie's grin was so broad that her eyes almost vanished into the folds of her face.
You should.
She turned to Lydia.
And you should do that too. Stuff you want to do. Not Dad, not Jake, not anyone, but you.
And Lydia nodded slowly, her mind already racing with things she might want to put on her list. After she'd completed her number 9, of course. But she didn't really want to think about that, not with things how they were at the moment. They left Lily with a hug, a sincere thank you and a word or two of encouragement. Do the scary thing, own it. If it doesn't go to plan, make a new plan. And then mother and daughter walked back out into the bright sunlight of the summer afternoon, their hearts just a little lighter than they had been, and their bellies unreasonably full of cake. Lydia couldn't help but smile as she walked along, passing all the places she had avoided on the walk there. There was a new strut to her stride, a warm buzz underneath her breastbone. The woman she'd been pretending to be wasn't Lily. It was just a less scared version of herself. She had been the one to do the things that scared her. She had done it when Lily couldn't. Which meant that maybe, just maybe, she wasn't so literally grey after all. Chapter 30. The car was searing when they first got into it, and it made Lydia think of Jake's mobile furnace with a knot in her throat. How did you find her? She asked, loudly enough so that Ollie could hear her over the roar of the substandard air conditioning in her car. But Ollie just laughed.
I think it's best you don't know. I'm probably on some kind of watch list now.
Lydia Mock glared at her daughter for a second or two before laughing out loud and reaching to kiss her lightly on the cheek.
Thank you. Ollie frowned, confused. For what?
Just for everything. Lydia fought against the sting in her eyes.
For being you.
And Ollie's smile in return was everything. Something was different about the house when they got back to it, and for a moment or two Lydia couldn't think what it was. But then it hit her suddenly, the shady outlines of two figures spying on them from the porch, where ordinarily there would only have been one. Ollie noticed it too.
Is that Babsha?
She squinted more closely at the house.
And Grandad?
And sure enough, Steve Pearson was standing next to his wife, peering through the glare of the glass as he watched his daughter and granddaughter walk together up the garden path. Lydia couldn't believe her eyes. Neither could she believe her ears when he said, the second they swung the door open,
"Come in, Lids, sit down. There's something you need to hear."
There was a grave tone to her father's voice, and that, along with the fact that he was talking in the first place, led her to panic a little, her heartbeat fluttering in her throat. Steve Pearson hadn't spoken a full sentence since the night his youngest daughter died. As the four of them sat together at Agger's old Formica dining table, Lydia fully expected Steve to tell her some other news of that severity. She braced herself.
"So,"
he started, a drag to his voice, as if this was the first time he'd talked for a while, which, in Steve's case, it probably was.
"I want to talk to you about Jake."
Her pulse roared to life then, rushing to her ears and her chest. "Did something happen?"
"Mishko, no,"
Agger scolded, the jut of her brow putting Lydia back in her place.
"Let your tata speak."
And Lydia nodded, repentant. Steve cleared his throat.
"I found out more about his accident."
"He has a lot of time to look things up on the internet, you see,"
Agger interjected.
"With all the time he saves on conversation and what have you, he has a lot of time to..."
"Mama, please," Lydia said, mimicking her mother's tone. "Let him speak."
"Right," Steve mumbled. "Yes."
Agger for once said nothing.
"So,"
Steve continued, his voice growing stronger with every word,
"I saw the story that Adam showed you about the partying and drinking and his arrest."
Lydia frowned, the idea of it still catching her off guard, at complete odds with the man she thought she'd known.
"But that's where Adam stopped,"
Steve said, the slightest of smiles tugging at his lips.
"He found what he wanted to find, and then he stopped looking."
Lydia's frown deepened. "Okay."
"That wasn't what I wanted to find,"
Steve said steadily now, his eyes never leaving his daughter.
"Because you changed when you were with him. You were the Lydia you used to be before any of this. Before Adam, even. Before Elena's accident. And I was so happy that Jake had that effect on you that I didn't want to believe he wasn't a good man."
He nodded once.
"So I kept looking."
Agger took a sharp breath, body coiled as if she were poised to jump in at any moment, but she didn't say a word.
"And I found more,"
Steve said, combing the flop of his greying hair out of his eyes. Lydia braced herself a second time. "Is it bad?"
"I don't know," Steve said simply, "but I think it's something you should ask him about."
"Okay," Lydia said, and she took a deep, steadying breath.
"I found another new story," Steve continued, "dated a few weeks after the first one. Seems that investigating officers found dashcam footage from the rental car that Jake was allegedly driving, which clearly showed Jake and his passenger swapping places after the crash. He wasn't driving when the accident happened, but he put himself in the driver's seat before the police arrived on the scene.
Steve dropped his face a little, peering intensely at Lydia over the top of his glasses.
He refused to comment on any of it, and they hadn't taken any samples from the man they thought was the passenger because he wasn't injured. So, in the end, all the charges were dropped.
The realization grabbed Lydia like a fist. She opened her mouth to speak, but it took a little while for the words to come.
He didn't do it.
No, Steve said. He didn't.
Her long-held breath escaped as a soundless laugh.
So why did he take the blame?
But Steve just smiled, his head tilting ever so slightly to one side as he said,
"That's a question you'll need to ask him."
"Well, now I'm even more cross with you,"
Tosh said as they sat in his kitchen that evening, Mila helping Ollie cook the red curry recipe she'd learned in Cambodia, while Tosh stared down Lydia over the dining table. Lydia rolled her eyes.
"You don't have to stick up for your best bro, Tosh. I'm mad enough with myself."
"Yeah,"
he said, making a face and handing a soldier of toast to Clara, who was sitting in her high chair between the two of them, arms flapping wildly as she spotted the food.
"You can't pull off best bro."
"I'll pull off whatever I damn well please," she replied with a huff.
Tosh smirked.
"You might want to rethink that too."
She rolled her eyes at him again.
"I came here for help. You're no bloody help."
"You actually came here for fish curry?" Ollie said from the hob, wiping beads of sweat off her forehead with the crook of her elbow.
"Be that as it may," Lydia said, pausing a beat to shoot daggers at her daughter. "I need help now."
Tosh eyed her with the special level of contempt generally reserved for siblings, which of course they practically were.
"I wouldn't know where to start."
"You should write a list,"
Mila called from her position, chopping red chilies on the other side of the kitchen. Ollie nodded.
"I told her that."
Lydia looked up with a frown.
"And it seemed a good idea when you first said it, but isn't a list what got me into this mess in the first place?"
"No,"
Tosh said, flinching as a glob of partially chewed toast which Clara had laughed out hit his cheek.
"You got yourself into the mess. The list had nothing to do with it."
"I hate to say this," Mila said, running one corner of a tea towel under the tap and tossing it to her husband. "But he's right. The list got you out of the house. It brought you Jake. It helped you get over Adam."
She smiled, tucking a loose strand of hair behind one ear.
"The list was a force for good."
"Lydia Gray's bucket list," Ollie mused, stirring the huge pot of fragrant curry.
"Doesn't have the same ring to it."
Lydia shrugged.
"Does it need to?" "No,"
Tosh declared, still wiping his cheek with the tea towel.
"If you want a ring, go out with Andrzej."
Lydia glared at him.
"Actually, you can't even do that,"
Tosh continued, wiping at something on Clara's cheek with the pad of his thumb.
"Did Ags tell you he was off the market? Eloped with that young barmaid from the Polish club, apparently. So you've cooked your goose on that front too."
"Ignore him,"
Mila said, shaking her head at Tosh before turning back to Lydia.
"It doesn't matter what you call it, only what you put on it."
"Okay," Lydia nodded, scrabbling around for a piece of paper and a pen.
"Let's do it."
Unfortunately, paper was in short supply in the Zielinski household, and after a minute or two of looking, Lydia decided the back of an envelope and a super washable green felt tip that she'd managed to scavenge would suffice. It wasn't going to be glamorous, but it was fine.
"Okay," Mila said. "Item number one."
Lydia didn't even pause. "Win Jake Jones back."
"Damn right,"
Tosh muttered under his breath.
"Hopefully,"
Lydia continued firmly, shooting daggers at Tosh. "Depending on his explanation, of course."
"Two?"
Ollie smiled, but she didn't look up from her pot. That was an easy one too. Move out, Tosh chuckled to himself.
And leave Casa del Ags.
Yes, Lydia said, definitely.
Think of all the pierogi you'll miss out on.
She huffed a laugh. Think of the privacy and or general self-esteem I'll gain. Tosh couldn't help but smile at that.
Three? Mila asked, pulling four bowls from the cupboard. Travel the world, Lydia said with a sure nod.
Ollie looked up at her.
You should have come with me.
But Lydia shook her head. I wanted you to find your own freedom. Who wants their mum hanging around on the first solo travel trip? She smiled at her daughter, something small catching at her chest when their eyes met. Plus, 6 months feels like a lot. I'm thinking more like lots of little trips. Mila smiled.
Sounds perfect.
Number four? Tosh asked, unclipping Clara from her seat and bundling her up in his arms, her giggles filling the whole room.
Lydia thought for a moment or two, back to the small seed of an idea she'd had earlier in the day, an idea that had stayed with her, nagging at her the whole time.
Career change, she said, tentatively, and three pairs of eyes looked at her in surprise.
Lydia had worked in the same place, in largely the same role, for almost the entire time Ollie had been alive.
What would you do? Mila asked gently, but Lydia just shrugged.
I haven't got that far yet.
She doodled a small flower in the top corner of the envelope.
I just feel like there must be more. When I got that job, I was just looking to help pay the bills while Ollie was small. And then I got stuck there somehow, trapped in the monotony.
She smiled, the idea growing roots the more she spoke about it.
I'd like to do something for me. Retrain, maybe?
Ollie beamed with pride.
Sounds amazing. I'll help brainstorm ideas.
Me too,
Mila chirped, bringing the steaming pot of food over to the table.
Five?
Lydia thought back to the day she'd just spent with her daughter.
Learn to make fancy cakes. Oh!
Ollie paused a moment while spooning hot rice into a serving bowl.
Like Francesca's.
Lydia nodded, her smile so wide now that her cheeks were beginning to ache.
Exactly like that. I saw a poster up while we were there earlier, advertising baking classes and workshops.
I volunteer as taste tester.
Tosh mumbled through a mouthful of toast edges he'd swiped from Clara's offcuts. Ollie laughed as she brought the rice and a small bowl of chopped chilies to the table.
Bold of you to assume there'll be any left to taste.
Lydia laughed at that. Maybe I'll make you a birthday cake for your 40th, Tosh.
Good plan,
he said, raising one eyebrow, a sure sign of incoming snark.
You can practice by making one for yourself, since yours is first.
Shush, you two,
Ollie said, carrying a bundle of cutlery and a big jug of iced water to the table.
You're both old,
Tosh huffed.
She's older.
Lydia pulled a face at him.
Six?
Mila asked firmly, shooting her mum warning look at Lydia and Tosh. And Lydia smiled, her fingers subconsciously going to her ribs. She knew exactly what six would be.
Grow my own potatoes.
Tosh frowned.
Well, that doesn't seem like a bucket list kind of activity.
Just feels important,
Lydia said with a shrug, not wanting to admit even to herself how deeply Agger's phrase had embedded itself into her chest.
Fair enough,
Ollie said, dishing out four plates of curry and rice, plus a small dish of rice for Clara.
Number seven?
But Lydia shook her head at that. No seven, that's it.
Only six?
Tosh frowned, blowing onto Clara's rice dish to cool it.
Is six enough?
Lydia nodded. Remember, I still have number nine on Lily's list to do too. Mila nodded.
The thing that scares you the most. Do you know what that is yet?
Lydia nodded, but she didn't answer. She knew exactly what it was. She just wasn't completely sure how she was going to pull it off.
Chapter 31. Lydia's heart was in her throat that Saturday morning as she walked up the short path to Jake's ground floor flat. She'd been there a fair few times, picking him up for their adventures or dropping him home afterwards, but it seemed like a different place now, in light of all the things that had happened. The path seemed longer, each step taking her closer and closer to her number 9 as her chest tightened and her pulse kicked into a race. Her knock was so timid that she feared for a while that he hadn't heard it, but after a few moments she saw movement behind the patterned glass of the door and she was quite overcome by nerves. "Don't be silly," she said quietly to herself. "It's just Jake." Except that she knew very well that there was no just Jake anymore. There was only Jake. Her heart sped to an almost impossible speed as the key began to turn in the lock, and as he pulled the door open wide, she thought it might stop entirely. And it almost did a moment later, when his eyes widened in shock before quickly narrowing.
"Can I help you?"
he asked, and every word was like a knife slicing deeper and deeper into her chest. But she had come here to do something, and if there was one thing that Lydia had learned in her life, it was that number 9s did not come easy. "Yes," she said, puffing her chest out in mock bravery. "You can." She took a deep breath. "Can I come in?" When she'd rehearsed this in her head, she'd imagined that he would say no, that he would shout or slam the door in her face. But he didn't do any of those things. He just pushed the door wider, stepping back a little way to let her in. Inside Jake's flat, there was no escape from the scent of him, and it rushed at her like a fist, flashbacks of the night they'd shared playing a montage in her mind as she tried like hell to calm her racing thoughts. She followed him down the short hallway to a kitchen that opened out to a compact living room, a small blue sofa sitting opposite an even smaller TV. There were bookcases on 3 of the 4 walls, stacked high with more books than Lydia had seen since that day in the library. And in one corner, an acoustic guitar sat in a black stand, the wood patinated and worn. He led her to the sofa and gestured for her to sit, pulling himself up on the worktop to the side of her. He was 6 feet away, but it may as well have been 6 miles. She longed to be nearer. She couldn't even quantify how much she'd missed him. He didn't look at her as he sat, his eyes seeming to find the floor instead, and that made it easier for Lydia to say what she wanted to, as well as infinitely harder. She decided to start simple. "Right, so," she started, dampening down the shake in her voice as much as she could. "I was going to come here and apologise, to say sorry for lying to you about who I am, about the kind of person that I am." She took a deep breath, feeling it ease the tremor in her body just a little. "But I'm not going to do that." He looked up at that, eyes lined with hurt and his frown set hard above them, an expression she'd never seen on him before. "Because I've realised," she continued, "that most of it was not a lie at all. I mean, obviously, I'm not Lily Bennet, that bit wasn't true, but that was the only thing. And that was kind of an accident. You just saw her list and assumed, and I jumped at the chance of being someone, anyone, other than me." His frown deepened impossibly.
"It wasn't even your list."
"No." Her eyes dropped to the floor. "I found it at the bottom of a supermarket trolley and decided to do it." He blew out a little laugh, tight and humourless.
"Why?"
"When we first met, I was at a really low point. I was a not quite 40-year-old living with my parents, and my ex-husband, who I was still in love with, had just told me in not so many words that I was too boring for him. Then I found a mysterious bucket list at the bottom of a supermarket trolley, and it felt like fate." She blushed a little, words tripping on her tongue as she spoke.
if fate were a thing I believe in, which obviously it isn't.
You could have written your own list.
I didn't trust my own decisions, she shrugged, fighting away the tears that were nipping at the corners of her eyes. This came right at the end of a whole series of plans I made, which didn't turn out the way I expected they would. Lily's list seemed like a safer option.
Safer than just being you?
She nodded, her breath catching a little as she tried to breathe the tears away. I didn't want to be me. I didn't like me, not one bit. And then when I met you and you assumed I was Lily, I just couldn't resist the opportunity to become someone different. Anyone, really, other than boring old Lydia Gray. So I modelled myself on this bold character that I assumed she was, and I let that energy carry me through every item on the list. I mean, obviously, I was rubbish at all of it, but actually, other than a few notable exceptions, I was having a really good time. I felt better when I was Lily. Being her made me feel like I was really living, not just bumbling my way through life. She brought her hands together, fingertips finding her knuckles idly as she spoke. But then I met the real Lily Bennett, yesterday, actually. And the real Lily wouldn't say boo to a goose. She didn't do a single item on her own list. That was when I realised that it wasn't Lily making me feel that way. Like I could take on the whole world, however reluctantly. It was you. She swallowed back the rush of feeling gripping her throat then, as Jake sat motionless on the worktop. He wouldn't even look at her. So, she said, her voice tightened by the knot of anxiety in her chest. I came to say I'm not sorry for anything that happened. The name wasn't mine and the list wasn't mine, but everything else, that was real. And I am sorry for lying to you. I know it was a shitty thing to do, and I'm sorry. That's all.
Well, I